Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and here with me now is Mary Jo Draper. She's the editor of the online news site Midtown KC Post. She was once the news director at KCUR, sadly before my time. We've never worked together. And she's just come out with a book, Kansas City's Historic Midtown Neighborhoods. Mary Jo, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, and it's great to be back here.
It's great to have you. Well, first of all, talk to me about your interest in all things Midtown. What's your relationship with that part of town?
You know, I keep trying to explain that to myself, but I've lived in Midtown for about 30 years, and for some reason, it just feels like home to me. I didn't come from Kansas City, but...
Where did you come from?
I'm from southeastern Ohio, and I always lived in smaller towns, and Kansas City was my first big city. But I have to say that to me, Midtown, because of the neighborhoods, because of the strong neighborhoods in Kansas City, there's a sense of family in the neighborhoods. There's a sense of place in Kansas City. And I almost think of the neighborhoods of Midtown as like little tribes. And I think that's what got me interested in writing this book, is that I'm sort of obsessed with where people live in Midtown. And a lot of people don't know where they live. And so it seemed like maybe there's an opportunity for people to learn a little bit more about the neighborhoods.
When you say people don't know where they live, what do you mean by that?
People, for instance, I live in the Valentine neighborhood. And when I tell people I live in Valentine, what they picture in their mind is a giant mansion, because there are really beautiful, big, huge houses over across the Southwest Trafficway in the Roanoke neighborhood. Valentine was developed a little bit later. It's a neighborhood of smaller homes. And so things sort of blend together in people's minds, and people... For instance, everybody knows Hyde Park, but nobody knows all of the other neighborhoods that that have really unique and interesting histories, too.
Well, how do you define, first of all, the boundaries of Midtown?
Well, that's a controversial subject.
It sure is.
And when I took over the Midtown KC Post about 3 years ago now, the boundaries had already been defined as 31st to 55th State Line to Paseo. And... one of the things that I've used to sort of bolster those boundaries is that the city's now doing a new area plan for all of Midtown, and it's called the Midtown Plaza Area Plan. Those are the exact same boundaries that the Midtown Plaza Area Plan is using. So there's something about the neighborhoods within those boundaries that have a lot in common in terms of how they developed and kind of what they're like now. So it makes sense to me, although... there are people that are lobbying to, like, be included in Midtown from other neighborhoods.
What other neighborhoods?
Well, in particular, somebody talked to me the other day about Longfellow and Union Hill. So the question is Union Hill downtown or is it Midtown? And I'm open to adopting them.
So adoptions are still possible. That's good to know. Before we dive into the past, which we are about to do, Are there issues that Midtown is facing today, from your perspective as someone who covers Midtown news, that you think are really framed by the past?
Well, yes, there are huge issues. I mean, one of the issues that many neighborhoods face in Kansas City is, as these neighborhoods developed, the cultural institutions and the churches and the schools moved south. So originally, everybody was downtown and in Quality Hill and in the Northeast. And then as people began to move south, as the residents filled in the neighborhoods, then the churches and the schools started to come and the hospitals started to come. And so over and over, we see this tension between the need for those institutions to expand and the need to preserve neighborhoods, sort of played out over and over and over again.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you give an example of a place where that happened? We know that kind of happens now. A place where it happened in the past and how they worked through it?
Well, St. Luke's Hospital is an example. You know, it was built in a small space. As it has expanded and expanded, it's needed more room. And so sometimes that means Sometimes it's been done well, and sometimes it hasn't been done that well. Sometimes it means taking houses. I think right now there are agreements between St. Luke's and the neighborhood around it. I think we've gotten much better at working out those kind of agreements so that we can figure, because neighborhoods understand that these institutions have to expand and that that's important. But at the same time, institutions need to understand that the neighborhoods are there, too. So we have to figure out how to do it together.
Your book is a compilation of images with really meaty captions. Viewed together, do these pictures tell a story?
I think they do tell a story. And the really strong story that makes Kansas City, these Midtown neighborhoods, so unique is that is the time period in which they developed, about 1880 to 1930, but also the fact that Kansas City had this extensive streetcar system. And the streetcar system really spurred the development of the neighborhood. So over and over again, we see what would happen was the wealthy people would move in, and then as the streetcars came in, the neighborhoods for middle class and lower class people would be built up around these streetcars so that they'd be able to have that kind of transportation. And then along the streetcar lines, streets like Armour Boulevard and Main Street and Broadway, which were originally residential streets, because they were on major streetcar lines, became converted into commercial districts. And so that structure really was one profound impact. And then another thing that's really unique about these neighborhoods is that they were developing at around the same time that the Park and Boulevard system was being developed in Kansas City. And everybody knows that we have, you know, one of the most unique Park and Boulevard systems. It makes the city really beautiful. And the parks and boulevards connect the neighborhoods. They were built not only to give people places for recreation, but they were built to shore up property values for a long time to ensure that
parkfront property.
Yeah, to ensure that we would have these beautiful neighborhoods with boulevards with these nice houses along them. And we can see that was successful. That's really worked. And it's interesting because the city council yesterday was just having a whole discussion about boulevard standards, and people were referring back over and over again to the standards that were put into place when the parks were being built.
That's super interesting. Is there a park in a Midtown neighborhood that you think we should know the story of?
Well, Penn Valley Park is very interesting. It's a little bit outside of the boundaries of Midtown, but it's very, very much related to Midtown. Penn Valley Park is one of, before the park system, before the whole City Beautiful movement and people started saying we really need to have these parks in Kansas City and we need to develop these parks to make the city more beautiful and more healthy, we had Penn Valley Park, which was a ravine, and there were a lot of shacks. There were squatters that lived in Penn Valley Park. And one of the reasons that they wanted to turn it into a park was to eliminate that problem. And a lot of those shacks, some of them were even picked up and moved over into the Valentine neighborhood, and folks lived over there in them for a long time. And then when they built other parks, for instance, when the Hyde Park neighborhood was built, the planners and George Kessler, who was involved in the Park and Boulevard system, said, we want to make sure that what happened in Penn Valley Park isn't going to happen in Hyde Park. So they intentionally built Hyde Park, which is in the center of the two parts of the roadway
of on Gillam.
Right. They purposely turned that into a park so that they wouldn't have that problem with squatters. So they were thinking about that kind of thing, and they wanted to preserve it because it wasn't buildable. You know, we have these really hilly, rocky parts of Midtown that just you couldn't really build a house on.
Call 816-235-2888 if you're a Midtown resident who stumbled upon something fascinating in your own midst. We'd love to hear that story. And Mary Jo Draper, tell me about your favorite photo in the book. Is there one you were just delighted and amazed to stumble upon?
For some reason, the picture of Ed's Florist on Gillam Road.
I love that one, too, because you drive down Gillam Road. And I think until very recently, at least, that sign that says Ed's Dainty Corsages, mm-hmm. It didn't matter what was behind that storefront. That was still there. And imagining a time when that would have been compelling marketing, Ed's Dainty Corsages, has fascinated me for a long time.
Yeah, and I think it's symbolic of these small neighborhood businesses that we had, and a lot of the photos in the book are from 1940 because there was a series of photos that were taken in the 1940s. And it seems that we had the neighborhoods that people are saying today that they want to see again. Walkable neighborhoods, neighborhoods with local businesses. Almost every neighborhood had its own grocery store or several grocery stores. They had movie theaters, local movie theaters, and all kinds of things that people say that's the kind of neighborhoods we want to create again.
Tell me about Janssen Place. That area in Hyde Park has always bewildered me. I used to go on walks in that neighborhood and felt like when I came upon Janssen Place, it was this little hidden world.
Well, it was supposed to be. It was built by Arthur Stillwell and a number of really wealthy lumber merchants. And so they built, it was a private street, and they built big, beautiful houses there. And the houses have really retained their value over the years. They're still, I've been in some of them, and they are just stunning homes, some of the most beautiful homes in Midtown. And
it was a private street, right?
A private street, yeah.
How do you create a private street?
Which was common in other parts of the country, not so common here. So at one point, I believe that Knickerbocker Place, which is off of Broadway at right around the Uptown Theater, was also a private street. There were only a couple of those. The developer built the streets instead of the city building the streets.
Oh, I guess that's simple enough. Talk to me about the entrance to Janssen Place. It's like stone columns and...
Yeah, and it's been there for many years. I'm thinking that a few years ago they actually rebuilt it and put a time capsule in there, or took a time capsule out of there. I can't remember which, but that entrance has been there for a long, long time.
Before we leave Hyde Park and go to other areas of Midtown, there are different sections of Hyde Park, and I'm curious about historically what distinguished, or I don't know, why did they develop a little differently from one another?
Well, there's a lot of confusion about Hyde Park, and then there's a neighborhood called that's now called Old Hyde Park. And when movement to the south began, really the first area to be developed was not Hyde Park, it was Old Hyde Park. So, and it was an area called that was called then the Kenwood Subdivision. So those, it's around Armour Boulevard, 36th Street, west of Main. Sorry, I'm not very good with my directions.
Okay.
And so that area started to develop. And then the Hyde Park area around the same time also started to develop. And then we have North Hyde Park and South Hyde Park. Because it's such a big neighborhood, I think over the years we've really kind of just split it up into three different neighborhoods. But it has one neighborhood association. But the parts are distinct. I mean, there are some older, more Victorian homes in North Hyde Park. And in South Hyde Park, we see a lot more bungalows and smaller homes that were built for working class people. It developed a little bit later, and it was more tied to the streetcar line.
Interesting. Let's head west to the West Plaza. Tell me about the style of homes in that neighborhood. I was interested to read that there are like good reasons why those houses look the way they do.
The West Plaza is a cool little neighborhood. I love the West Plaza. And a lot of those, once again, and I didn't realize this when I started writing the book, and I found it really interesting. West Plaza was a neighborhood that was developed as a working class neighborhood, and there were some very small homes in the West Plaza. So there were homes that were three rooms. They didn't have, I think it was 1906 when they got sewer and water in that neighborhood. So before that, these homes were very rudimentary. They had a wood stove in the kitchen that served for both eating and cooking. And then as the city infrastructure was sort of built out, those homes were sort of retrofitted. A lot of them were added on to. But when you start to think about the way these neighborhoods developed, smaller lot sizes, you can see the larger lot sizes were the areas that were built for the really wealthy people. The smaller lot sizes, like West Plaza, were built for more working class people. But what's really cool about West Plaza now is, you know, they've started to do a a thing called Porch Fest there. And they've learned that there are a lot of musicians and artists that live in that neighborhood because the homes are smaller and more affordable. So the historic nature of the neighborhood has sort of carried on.
That neighborhood also has a lot of antique shops now. What used to be in those commercial spaces?
That used to be the shopping area of the neighborhood. So there were grocery stores. There was a little diner there. There was a barber shop, just like there were in other neighborhoods. But that was their shopping area.
Let's talk to Brandon in Midtown. Hi, Brandon.
Hi there.
Where specifically in Midtown are you? As long as we're carving it up today.
Yeah. And I think she's right that a lot of people can consider Midtown, parts of Midtown that I don't really think are Midtown, but I am at 39th and Roanoke.
Okay.
Yep. That's definitely Midtown though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely Midtown. And what I was talking about earlier with the producer is I was here for 5 years. I got my undergraduate degree at UNKC and I moved away to grad school in Iowa for 2 years. And while I was gone, everything on Facebook was Kansas City is one of the greatest places to move for young people or for these kind of people or to start working or to do all these things. And which is great and awesome, especially for a city that you love. But when I was moving back here, I thought, oh, is it going to be totally different? Is Midtown going to become, you know, something crazy with tons of people and all these commercial things? But when I came back here, I mean, there were some new things. There were some new local places and some things I hadn't seen before, but it was overall the same. You all said earlier that it feels very homey, and that's what I always loved about it, is it feels very, very family-driven, and you feel like you can just walk around anywhere in the middle of the night, and there's no problems, but it doesn't look like a city. It looks like, you know, suburban life anywhere with all these older homes and manicured lawns and other people walking their dogs. And so it's interesting. It's this weird little bungalow of a neighborhood right in the middle of, you know, the city. And that was what attracted me to it, you know, 7 years ago when I was moving here, and then why I wanted to move back here after I went away for a little while.
Brandon, can you put your finger any more on what feels like home about Midtown to you? Because I think that's an interesting comment to hear repeated. And what do you think that's about?
I think it's like I said, that there on any given day you can walk by and you'll see a family like in their front yard doing something in the garden, or there'll be, you know, an older couple out on their porch taking in the sunshine or something, reading a book. And then you see, you know, and you see every variant of family. So you see the young couple who's, you know, trying to get, you know, start, you know, their flowers or do this or that, mow the lawn. Then you've got, like I said, the older people on their porch. And all of this happens, you know, while you walk by. And then, you know, while you're walking your dog and meet other people that way, and you talk on the street. And then you get in your car and you can drive, you know, 2 minutes and be at the Kauffman Center. So it's an interesting feeling, knowing that you're here in this very, very calm and approachable neighborhood, but yet you can be, you know, downtown in the heart of things in no time at all. And that's why I love it. And I don't want to oversell it too much, because I don't want to get flooded with people here. But that's why I like it so much.
Thanks, Brandon. Mm-hmm. A lot of mentions of front porches and front yards. Can you talk about that?
Front porches are a big feature of Midtown, and I think the neighborhoods continue to fight for even new development to always have front porches that faces the street, because we want to be oriented towards the street and oriented towards other people. And another thing that I guess I love about Midtown is the use of stone in a lot of the front porches. And over in the history of Midtown being developed, we see that there were these quarries of rock in different places. There was one in Roanoke Park that was used to build Roanoke and Valentine and Coleman Highlands. As the neighborhoods developed, they used the stone to build the foundations and the big, beautiful front porches that we have. And there are a lot of the feeling of Midtown comes from those porches.
There's a neighborhood that you that you include in here that I think is maybe less well known than some of the others. It's Troostwood. Can you talk to us about Troostwood?
Troostwood is a really cool little neighborhood, too. I'd like to live in every neighborhood in Midtown. But, and it's just south of KCUR, as a matter of fact. It's on the other side of Volcker Boulevard. And so
from the station where we're sitting, that means
right. It's
south.
South. And it's a neighborhood that was built. It's up high, so it has some really cool views from up there. And from the very beginning, that the neighborhood has served as UMKC was being built, Troostwood was built out. So it's always been connected with Rockhurst University or Rockhurst College, as it used to be known, in a unique little part and right along Troost. And it's a little pocket area that you wouldn't know if it's there. If you didn't have reason to go there, because it's not something that you would just drive through normally, but it's a beautiful neighborhood.
Talk about that, though. Why our city is built in a way that there are these hidden pockets that if you're on a main thoroughfare, you don't necessarily see entire neighborhoods. Is that particular to Midtown, or is that particular to Kansas City?
I would think not, because I think we have thoroughfares. We have, you know, if you talk to the city traffic people, they certainly have a clear idea of what streets the cars should be running on and what streets should be more residential. And, you know, my neighborhood, I think in particular about my neighborhood, Valentine, which is in between Southwest Trafficway and Broadway. When we think about it as a neighborhood, we as neighbors think there's a difference about what kind of development we'd like to see on Broadway and the trafficway as opposed to on the inside of the neighborhood. So we're in between, you know, we're sort of squared in by big streets. But it just like Brandon described, it's like a little community inside of that.
There are a lot of apartment buildings and hotels that you've included images of from Armour Boulevard. Can you tell us some about the history of Armour Boulevard and those structures?
Yes, Armour Boulevard is fascinating, and that's my next book, I hope. And Armour, in the beginning, as Hyde Park was developing, some of the wealthiest people built their homes along Armour Boulevard. It was a new boulevard, part of the Parks Department. There was a one home that I include in the book that belonged to KB Armour, who was with the Armour Meatpacking Company, one of the wealthiest men in Kansas City, built this.
What time period are we talking about?
We're talking the turn of the century, and it must have been one of the most spectacular homes. Just, you know, very, very, very wealthy people built these giant mansions on Armour Boulevard. By the 1920s and 1930s, there was a huge housing shortage. And those homes were torn down, which it's kind of mind-boggling because they weren't that old. They'd probably still be standing today. But there was a demand for these, what they called luxury residential hotels. So hotels like the Bellevue, which has recently been refurbished and people are living in again, they were built where it was harder and harder for families to get servants, so they could sort of combine. They had dining rooms. They had servants that were available to you, but you didn't necessarily have to have your own. And it was luxury living.
So luxury living when you're sharing dining rooms in order to share your servants on Armour Boulevard. And this is what year again?
1930s, 1940s, 1920s and 30s.
This trip back in time has been so fascinating. Mary Jo Draper, I'm hanging on to this book and spending lots of time with it. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Mary Jo Draper's book is called Kansas City's Midtown Neighborhoods. She's also the woman behind the Midtown KC Post online. To listen back to this conversation and to the sour beer tasting from earlier this morning, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. We'll have that ready for you later today, and you can continue the discussion about Midtown neighborhoods on our Twitter feed. We're at KCURCST. Tomorrow, it's a food show. Dips and spreads. We're talking about hummus, chutney, aioli, guac, whatever dips and spreads you are into. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Thanks to Andrea Tudhope for her sour beer reviewing expertise. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.